In the beginning, there was the creation of a small plastic case. In this case, there was an item called a DVD. When the DVD was placed inside the machine, the first movie was being watched. This allowed the Extra Features podcast to begin.
Welcome back to another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon.
I'm Daniel.
Hey, where's the intern?
I don't know. I think he's eating himself to death or something. I don't know.
Who let him out?
He's eating.
Maybe looked at Mary Shelley's results from the box office.
Oh, man.
And he died of shock and awe. Who let the intern out?
Who let the intern out?
I thought he had a racing heart or something.
I don't know. I don't even know what that means. So that's what he said. So
it means he's in love.
Oh, okay, good. Well, he's in love then.
I don't know what that means.
A racing heart?
Yes.
Oh, no.
So
what's it racing with?
Maybe a cheeseburger?
Enthusiasm?
Yes. Needs to curb that enthusiasm.
So what have you been up to, Kev?
I was in Edmonton last weekend.
With snow.
For Edmonton Expo, where it snowed.
What?
Yeah, good luck from summer weather to winter weather over the course of a day. And then it's been cooling off here at home, but it's still nice, as you know.
Dan?
Fair enough.
What are you doing up to?
For weather, we had a tornado here last week.
It's like, in the Ottawa area.
Yeah, that was like 30 minutes away from me, but it wasn't near me, so.
I had two cousins who had their places affected.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one is entire upper floor, the windows blew in. And there was his bedroom, master bedroom furniture got all damaged. And then my other cousin, the tree went through her front window.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
So, yeah, crazy.
Okay. Well, that means things aren't doing well weather-wise for us, I guess.
Climate change.
Nope, doesn't exist.
Strange weather patterns.
Doesn't exist. I listen to Trump all the time. Doesn't exist.
Well, it's because we're winning. We're winning bigly. We're all losing, too.
It's the wettest we've seen in terms of water.
Yes.
Did you guys see that?
Yes.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be truly epic.
It's the end of summer, Kevin. Would you like a result?
Oh, the summer movie poll. How did we do?
Who would you like place? Would you like to know?
Well, I won, right?
You did not win.
You won, right?
Simon?
Pardon?
You won, right?
I won, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's fixed.
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles gave me 13 points, Kevin. Nobody else had it in the top. You had it as 3. Bob had it as 5. Dan had it as 3. I'm the only one that put his number 1.
I thought about it, but I didn't have the nuts to do it. I didn't have the courage.
So, Dan, you're in, Kevin, you finished Bob, well, with Mary Shelley in Shock and Awe. You had a great year of 31 points.
Wow.
Phenomenal.
Bob did. Okay.
The third place is Kevin with 54 points.
Okay.
Second place, Dan the Man. 58 points.
Close one, Kevin.
And the new champion at 65 points. Mwah.
Ooh, stacked at the top there, huh?
What can I say, man? Incredibles gives you 13 points.
Nice one.
So I have no complaints. Would you want to wait for the movie you're going to have to watch, Kevin, or you're just going to guess?
Well, so I'm looking here. How do we consider what were we looking at here now? We're looking at the summer from the months of what? June? May?
Yes. Number one was Incredibles 2.
Based on what ending? So we're looking at the year.
Labor Day.
Right. So September.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just looking here.
At box office.
So, yes, Incredibles 2. Now, unfortunately, I'm just looking at as of, data as of I'm just going to verify your results here.
Go ahead.
So when was Labor Day? September what, 30? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Labor Day is September 5th.
Are you sure?
Yeah. 4th?
No, it wasn't. Labor Day was Monday, September 3rd.
Okay, well then, whatever. Just click on summer on Box Office Mojo.
See, you're already trying to just change the results here.
No, I'm not changing.
Hey, you can't process my results. What the hell?
Aha.
This is useless. Data as of September
3rd.
3rd, 2018.
There we go.
Go. Which says it's not able to process my results. Huh.
I have it here.
As of.
This is great.
I can go as of August 31st.
Okay. Fine.
Nope, still not processing my results.
It doesn't like you. What do you want to
see? So, number one, if I go by now, of the summer movies, Incredibles 2, number one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, number two.
Correct.
Deadpool 3, or 2, yes. Is number three.
We don't have that on our list. It started too early.
Right, started too early. Mission Impossible Fallout.
It will be our third, yes.
Which I know I place higher than most of everybody else.
You place Mission Impossible as fifth.
Did I have that as fourth, as sixth?
Dan had it as fifth.
Okay.
I had it as seventh. And the intern had it as fifth.
Interesting. Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Number one for you.
Right.
I think that's the only one I got spot on. Number four.
Yeah, you got 10 points.
Hotel Transylvania. Oh, we missed Solo.
Hotel Transylvania, you had eight, though, Kevin.
No, we did.
Number eight.
Solo qualified.
Dan hit spot on his number two pick and his number four pick.
Okay. And then we got Crazy Rich Asians, The Meg. I don't know when Mamma Mia came out. I guess, is that in the time?
Mamma Mia made it.
July 10th, maybe?
You
Peter Rabbit is a no. The Nun is a no because it's after. Equalizer 2.
I think only Dan's the only one that had it on his list at number 10.
That is my Dark Horse. Oh, no, number 10. It came in 11th for us.
Disney's Christopher Robin.
Dan, you both had it as Dark Horse.
Whoops.
What else is there? Skyscraper.
Yeah, I got smoked on that one.
Yeah, I thought that was my number six, right?
Correct. I had my six, too.
My bad.
I don't know. Sicario is way down there. I don't know what else is came out during that time. Black Klansman.
Yeah, nobody had that in this list.
Predator.
Predator's recent.
Yeah, that's Hereditary.
Nobody had Hereditary on the list.
Uncle Drew.
Oh, wait, I lied. Kevin had Hereditary as number 10th on his list.
Yeah.
Came in 22nd for the summer.
Yeah. Oh, well. It's a good pick. All right. Well, we'll just have to
do better next time, guys. That's all I have to say.
Let's see. Summer.
I'll get my revenge next year, Simon.
I'll be waiting.
Number two, my first year. That's pretty okay.
Well, you beat the intern. That's all that matters, right?
That's the goal. Just beat the intern, right?
Mary Shelley, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and Shock and Awe. Don't forget Shock and Awe.
I think that's collusion. You made him pick those, didn't you?
No, he bought the same magazine as I did.
You guys pick through magazines for these?
Well, no, because I get Entertainment Weekly every week. They do a summer movie special.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And all the movies are in there, so that's why I read them.
All right.
So I know
fair enough.
So, would you like to know the movie you're going to have to watch, Kevin, or no?
Why do I have to watch? I came in third.
Right. I'm assigning everybody a movie. One movie.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry, what?
Ordinary People.
The one with Mary Tyler Moore?
Yes.
Gosh, okay, fine.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll see if I can find that.
I'll send you a copy.
Yay.
I'm going to have to go get one myself. Okay, moving along.
That's too dramatic.
I want to see it. Okay. A big summer movie came out, Crazy Rich Asians, which Kevin decided not to watch.
No, but I've been too busy to see any movies the last month and a half.
It is, but Dan saw it, and I would love to tell you who's in it, but I really can't remember off the top of my head, but I can look it up.
That's why IMDb exists.
Constance Wu, Henry Golding, Michelle Yeoh, and Gemma Chan, and what's it? Awkwafina. And Ken Jeong. So, Dan, what did you think of Crazy Rich Asians?
I liked it, actually. It kind of like checked all my boxes for like a romantic comedy. Made me cry at the end. Made me laugh. And I don't really know a lot about the culture and everything, but it seems like they portrayed that like realistically. And it's cool that like it has like an all Asian cast. And Awkwafina is really funny. Like, when I saw like the trailers and everything, and I didn't even recognize her from Ocean's 8.
How could you not recognize her from Ocean's 8? She looks exactly
the same. It's such a different hairstyle, though.
I don't know. I recognize her, no problem.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I thought the film was great. I had a really good time watching it. I mean, I don't think it did anything different than most romantic comedies. I like the story. I like some of the scenes. I thought the bachelorette party was a little nuts.
Oh, right. It was like kind of like the freaking dead horse head or whatever.
No,
or
they all have the clothes and you get the free clothes and they all just run at them.
True.
I thought that was good. Awkwafina I thought was great, as you said also. It just was fun seeing something different for romantic comedy.
Yeah, that's true. And like, I thought, like, just, like, the different upbringings were, like, just gave it an interesting aspect to it all.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. I think it's watchable. I mean, I wish I could say more, but there's nothing really to say. It didn't upset me anyway. It's just, it was fun.
I mean, as far as, like, the story goes, it feels pretty standard. But yeah, like, it is fun. It's entertaining. And, yeah, I didn't really have much of a problem with it at all.
I did like the part when Awkwafina has to show up. Hey, I'm going to the rich house. I thought that was kind of cute. Yeah.
And then she has all the dresses in her trunk.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
And I thought really the end of the film was good too. I did enjoy the end.
Yeah, like the wedding scene. That was good.
The only part I didn't like was his sister. I think it's his sister.
I think it was his really close cousin.
Okay.
Like, it's showing the parallels of, like, her, like, marrying someone who's kind of where Constance Wu, like, is from, like, her upbringing, and just feels inferior and everything.
That just didn't feel right to me.
Yeah, I thought, like, it just kind of, like, maybe previewed something, like, for her, but that she didn't really see. Like, just be like, okay, this is what could happen, even though it's completely different scenario, like, they're completely different people.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess it's just like a book subplot that they wanted to still keep in there.
Well, I think the next film is supposed to be based on her.
There's going to be another one?
Yeah, there's three books.
Oh, I did not know that. Cool.
So we're going to get another one. So we'll find out more, I guess. I mean, yeah. I think it's fun to watch. I just don't. I mean, a lot of people loved it because it was all Asian cast, which is great.
Yeah.
But like I'm saying, it's just a romantic comedy. It's a solid, good romantic comedy. I mean, it's like Crazy Stupid Love. It's enjoyable, but it's equally as forgettable as when I leave the door as I walk out.
I feel like I will remember this one, like, if anything, for the cast and the story, too. I've only seen Constance Wu on Fresh Off the Boat, and like only on a few episodes, but I really like her.
Is that where she's from?
Yeah, I think so. With Randall Park.
She did a good job. I don't watch this stuff.
Okay.
So, Dan, are you young enough to remember Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
I think I saw him more on Family Guy being parodied, and I never really watched the show. But I don't, I'm born 94, so he's way before my time.
So, Kevin, we know we both watched Won't You Be My Neighbor, starring Fred Rogers and cast of others.
Uh-huh.
What did you think?
I thought it was fascinating. I was riveted from beginning to end. I thought Rogers I was a kid who watched that show when I was much younger, because the show debuted in the late 60s and was a staple on PBS pretty much through to the, like, early 90s, I guess. He retired I don't know what year he retired, but it was like in the 90s. And he died in like 2003.
He died in 2003?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because he was very upset by 9/11. It's actually brought up in the documentary.
It is.
Yeah. And then and when he passed away, people were picketing him because they felt that he was. So Rogers was a very, weird, but interesting character. He was like a book, very open and kind to children, but in retrospect, I know that there's a creepiness to it as well that you can sort of see. Not that I'm saying that he was creepy or meant to be creepy, if you follow what I'm saying. I think there's a society views that kind of open, friendly dialogue with children by an adult is odd.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And he was not gay, but he could be viewed as such. He was effeminate, I guess, in his approach. He had a very southern accent and sort of came across as kind of like, but he was a loving person, but not a sexual person, if that makes sense.
It does. I think this thing was fascinating, how much he saved PBS television.
But he single-handedly saved PBS.
I was shocked by that.
Yeah, because he was, I guess in the early 70s, it was before the federal budget guy that Nixon appointed. And basically, it was either PBS got $20 million or they ceased operations. And it was Fred Rogers' appeal in discussing about how important what he was trying to do with children was that he completely won over this hard-nosed jerk that was, you know, the penny-pinching guy that Nixon had appointed.
I think I found him strange at times, you know. His kids would do things, and he wouldn't really scold them. He would talk to them as Daniel the Lion.
Yeah.
I thought that was really weird at times. I was like, okay.
Well, it sounds like he came from a background where he had issues himself with his self-image and his weight, and he was not a confrontational person. And later on, he decided to go into the ministry, and it was there, I guess, he lost a lot of weight and confidence in himself and so forth. But he was fascinated by the early days of television and the power of the medium. And it was like either go into the ministry or go into television. And he chose to go into television. And he did a local Pittsburgh television show where he had puppets and, you know, they were singing and interacting with children. And it was a big hit. And so when PBS sort of came into being in the 60s, he was one of the first shows that was picked up by PBS and was given national syndication with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah, I was just shocked how he could talk about anything.
Well, he, and you know, like the week of Robert Kennedy's assassination, which was the first week on air, so that was 69. Or, I don't know, I think it was, or maybe 67, I can't remember what year. He basically, the puppet goes to the girl and she says, what does assassination mean? Like this little tiger that's very childlike. And the girl's like, oh, where did you hear that word? But it was honest. It was basically not talking down to children. Children would hear things. And so he felt that it was necessary to address it. You know, what does war mean? What does this mean? What does that mean? You know, addressing children with disabilities, like that poor kid, Jerry, that had spina bifida and was confined to a wheelchair and was going in for surgery.
I just thought it was fun. I thought his kids were my favorite people to listen to.
Right, and as one of his kids is like a dirty old man. Not a dirty old man, but like he looked like an big hairy mountain man.
Yes.
And then his other son is like a kind of like a pudgy version of him.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I just get the feeling that he was everybody's father in some way, or surrogate father in some ways.
I thought it was fascinating he did all the voices. I had no idea of that.
Yeah, he did about 20 different voices.
Which I thought was really good. The one thing that upset me that was missing was Lady Aberdeen.
Yeah.
She didn't want to be interviewed for it because she hadn't been on camera in so long, and I actually really wanted to hear her.
Right, and she was a big part of the show for many, many years.
Because they did everybody else, but just not her, and I was kind of like, I understand you haven't been on camera in years, but didn't you want to be a part of this? Something was such a big part of your life?
Well, and there were some interesting parts of it, too. Like, he dealt with issues of racism. He had the local police officer was played by a black man, and so when people were kicking African Americans out of swimming pools in the summer, he decided to have an episode where he was just dipping his feet in a pool in the backyard, and the police officer came by and he said, "Why don't you take your shoes off and put your feet in the pools?" And so they just had them with their feet in the pool, relaxing, and just to show that there was nothing, you know, everybody gets along.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason for that kind of silliness. You know, it was very cool. I mean, I know there were some criticisms that some people felt that he raised a generation of people that were told that they were special when they really weren't. But I think he felt that psychologically children needed to hear from someone that you're special and you're a good person. And you needed that reinforcement, positive reinforcement, to give kids confidence to grow and be individuals.
But I think that's good as a kid. They should know they're special. I mean, they have problems, kids at that age. They haven't really grown up and get their own identity until you're 11, right. 12, 13 when it starts to form.
And there was one powerful episode where the tiger just goes, I think it probably would be better if I wasn't around.
Yeah.
You know, sort of dealing with kids' feelings of suicide or not being wanted or you know, stuck in issues of divorce, things like that. I thought it was very powerful. It was very riveting. I was, I wouldn't say I was crying, but I was emotionally moved throughout the movie by the tales of the son and the things that he did. That just gave me this sense of genuine goodness. You know, that he was a genuine kind soul. And he was trying to do some good in the world.
I agree.
And so, yeah, it's a very fascinating documentary. I highly recommend it.
So do I. Moving along.
You have nothing else to add to that, or did I cover it all?
I think you covered it all. I'm letting you talk because you haven't seen a lot this week, so I'm just letting it go.
Oh, okay. Great.
Sounds like I'll give it a watch. I don't really watch a lot of documentaries, so yeah. That sounds good.
It's a good one, Daniel. It's worth checking out.
Okay.
You're talking. Because
I think we're lacking that kind of a personality on TV right now.
I think so, too.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think kids nowadays don't have that type of programming. I think it's all cartoons and sell. That's all we see nowadays.
Well, actually, touching on one thing, he brings up the whole Superman was popular, right? In 78, when the Superman movie came out. So he decided to address superheroes and make-believe. As, you know, as there were stories of kids putting towels around their neck and jumping out windows and doing stuff. I was certainly a kid who threw a towel around his neck and pretended he was a superhero. And when I was 3 and 4 years old, I was definitely one of those kids. So, anyway, just interesting.
I did that when I was a teenager.
Okay. But by that point, you knew the difference between make-believe and, you know, you weren't jumping 15 feet out windows. When...
Oh, no, I was just walking around the house.
I think you could fly. You know, he just felt it was important that kids knew the difference.
Okay.
All right.
Are we getting to the commuter now?
Sure, if you want.
Liam Neeson, and I can't remember, Vera Farmiga. Come on,
yeah,
gentlemen.
Yeah, Vera. Patrick Wilson, I think.
I think you're right. See, the intern's not here to do all this work for me, so I have to do it myself.
Yeah, Patrick Wilson was his buddy, the cop buddy. And then there was that other passenger who's done a million things, million character
breaks. Jonathan Banks, Sam Neill, Elizabeth McGovern. That's the highlights.
Right.
Okay. You didn't watch The Commuter, right, Dan?
I watched it back in January.
So I'll
probably like banter off of you guys because I can't remember it all that well. Other than like the person has my last name.
Right. No, correct. Right. Gavin, you watched this recently. Why don't you start?
I did. All right. Well, basically, Liam Neeson is a commuter. He and his wife. I guess they're having fighting. He's a former cop, and he's an insurance adjuster now. And he loses his job, and he's on a train, and he gets this message, like basically that someone is on the train that. They want for, and I can't remember why they want them. They can turn the evidence against somebody.
She saw something. She's a witness to something.
Yeah. So, well, they don't say who it is, male or female.
No.
So they basically tell Liam Neeson that it's his job to find the person on the train and eliminate them. And so that's what he does. Single-handed, like he's trying to find them, but not kill them. And so, I don't know, it's just before they hit the end of the line, essentially.
Yeah, because they're only known as Prin.
Right.
Yeah.
So I thought it had some interesting thriller moments. There were some strange things like him going under the train and putting a body under the train and all that stuff. Killing a dude, they kill a dude to make sure that he follows instructions.
He's good. Right.
I don't know. I mean, it was not like the most riveting film. It was okay. You know, Liam Neeson, pretty much it's a Liam Neeson movie, so he's playing himself.
He is?
Yeah.
You know, it's basically the same character from Taken and whatever. He's always a former cop or a former secret agent or a former somebody that's put into a situation where he has to call upon old skills at the behest of somebody, whether it's to save someone or to find someone or do whatever. So, I don't know. It was okay, I guess. Yeah,
I liked it enough for it's basically nonstop on a train.
Uh-huh. Yes, I agree with you. I just think this is another one of those least of needed movies. Like, do I need to see this?
And then, you know what, to be honest, I don't remember the final ending. I know that they're skidding and there's a train car.
Oh, I can tell you the final ending. He finally figures out who it is. It was so obvious to me who it was. It was the woman reading
the letter.
Uh-huh.
And if Liam Neeson had read the book, he'd know Prin's the character in the book. She's the main character. So I knew that. As soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, my God, that's weak.
Spoiler, yeah.
If we don't give out spoilers on the show after this. And then he's like, oh, there she is. I'm like, did we ever see her in the movie? Like, did we ever see that book? I mean, I would have known in 2 seconds if I'd seen that book who it was.
I don't think we see the book, but I think he passes her. And she's reading something, but we don't see the cover.
He sees her on a couple of different occasions, I think, and she moves cars.
I guess my whole point of it is there's no way he could have figured this out.
No, it was just blind luck.
Sending me on a subway car going, find them by Finch. I don't know. Too many of them.
Because, like, wasn't it, like, end of the line and there's only, like, 5 of them left? And he was like, hey, maybe it's you.
Maybe it's you.
Hey. I don't know. And then he fights with one of them and it's like, oh, hey, you were reading the Scarlet Letter. It's you.
No, I'm
Prin. And his poor buddy, he rides the train with every day. He gives them some info when they kill him on the street.
Yes.
And stuff like that, yeah.
Terrible.
Can't remember what actor played him.
This was so dumb.
That guy's done a million things, too.
Didn't the guy from Breaking Bad play him? I think it was a Breaking Bad guy.
Yeah, he was a Breaking Bad guy.
Jonathan Banks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought this film was atrociously bad, Kevin.
Oh, really?
I thought it was mediocre.
Yeah, like, I'd give it, like, a 5 out of 10, 6.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I'd say if you're just looking for a time filler with some action, I wouldn't say, you know, you must see this, but if you're bored and you have nothing else on, it's okay.
So I did kind of suspect you set him up from the get-go, though.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there always has to be a setup, I find, in these. There always has to be somebody he knows.
I don't know if we should spoil it, but, I mean, it's probably be obvious to some people.
Well, it's pretty obvious. It's like watching Paul Bart Mall Cop. It was too easy. It has to be a
I don't remember. Was it his buddy?
Yeah. It's like, I knew it when he was like, oh, I'm having money troubles. And then he kind of looked at him when he was leaving. Like, okay, well, if he knows, he's going to set him up.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too, because Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga were in the Conjuring films together.
They were.
And then here they are. They're the evil people behind this whole thing.
Maybe it's the same producers. I have no idea. I didn't look it up.
I feel like she's always playing this, like, okay, you have to do this, and then she just fucks off and leaves.
Godzilla. They can do it again in Godzilla.
There you go.
Oh, is she going to be in that one? Okay.
Yeah.
Fair.
She plays the evil mother that sets off the monsters or something like that.
Oh, okay.
In the trailer, at least, so.
I have not seen it because it's a trailer. I don't watch them, so wouldn't know.
So, Simon, you hated it, right?
The Commuter? Oh, it was terrible. Yeah. 3 out of 10, right. Maybe?
I can't remember a thing. Like, I can't remember much about it.
I remember all of it. Just boring. Just typical Liam Neeson, like, nonsense.
Yeah, but if you like Liam Neeson, it's probably okay.
Yes, absolutely. I like Liam Neeson. And it was less than okay.
If you like Taken and stuff like that, it kind of fits that genre.
I didn't even think the first Taken movie was that good. I don't understand why people
I love the first Taken.
I like the first Taken. I don't like the other two.
No. I've seen them all. The third one's really bad.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, I don't remember Taken 3.
I do. They kill his wife.
Honestly, like, I forgot that it came. Like, I saw it, and then I forgot, like, a few months later, is that coming out? So I forgot that I saw it.
That's pretty bad. Okay.
Not bad. Yeah.
Let's take a little trip to Little Italy with Hayden Christensen, Emma Roberts, Alyssa Milano, Danny Aiello, Andrea Martin, Jane Seymour, and Adam Ferreira. Dan, what did you think of Little Italy?
Oh, I did not see this one.
Too bad for you, Kevin. Kevin?
Why don't you go ahead, Simon?
You want me to go first with Little Italy?
Yeah, since, you know, since I had to go the last two times. So.
Fine. Little Italy. How do I start this? It's terrible. Like, that whole beginning of the film was just bad.
What's the film about, Simon?
The film is about this woman who's in love with her friends, her neighbor, the other pizza partner's son, and she doesn't think it works out and decides to go to England to become a chef. And then she has to come back. What?
Where is it set?
It's set in Little Italy. I'm getting there. She comes back from England because she has visa issues, and she goes to Little Italy in Toronto.
Yes, in Toronto, yes.
And they hook up again and rekindle the romance.
Right.
And then she comes back, and they hate each other. And now we got a problem there. That's what the film's about.
So, just to sweep over the story a little bit, the fathers used to be in business together.
Yes, partners.
And one year at the Chin Picnic.
Yes.
Which has been relocated to the whatever, distillery district.
Correct.
They fight over something.
Yes.
And then they hate each other. So later on we learn that it was because something to do with the parents. They fought over who they should name the restaurant after.
Correct.
Right? One, you know, his father or, you know, the other guy's mother.
Yes.
So, yes. So Emma Watson is in London working for Jane Seymour. And she's given a time to go home and get her visa in order. So she goes back to Toronto where she meets up with Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
Who's now, in her opinion, a hot guy.
Yes.
And he lives over a bar with an Asian guy named Luigi.
Correct.
And anyway, I thought it was cute.
Oh,
But I'll let you go ahead. You tell me why it was so terrible.
No, it's just it's the script issues were all over the place. It was evident. I just thought it was just lame. Like that scene with the cop patting down Hayden Christensen.
I thought that was hilarious.
Oh my! See, I didn't even find that funny. I found
so the one guy, the father of Emma Watson, plays a prank on Hayden's father by changing the oregano with weed, and so everybody eats the weed pizza and they get high and they start doing stupid things, including the police officer who ate a slice of weed pizza. And proceeds to pad down Hayden Christensen, talking about his six-pack and all that stuff. And it's it's in the Me Too era, it would be considered sexual discrimination, like a discrimination against Hayden, that cop was doing that, treating him like an object.
I did thought the rain scene was kind of cute when they're playing soccer in the rain. I'll give them that.
And they're drinking, yes.
I didn't mind that. But other than that, I just thought this was lame.
I thought Emma Watson was very attractive in this movie. I've never really found her pretty, and I thought she had a charm about her in this film.
Really?
Kind of a tomboyishness.
Oh.
And I liked Hayden Christensen, too. Normally, I find his acting wooden. Here, I thought he had some personality. I liked him, and I liked Luigi. I liked that character. He's on Kim's Convenience. He's the brother's friend on Kim's Convenience.
He's the only guy I could put up with him. Danny Aiello was just sort of there. I thought Andrea Martin was
I thought that was cute
there.
With the Andrea Martin and the Danny Aiello. See, Bob would have loved this movie.
He would have, and he was supposed to. He's the reason why we're watching it tonight.
This is a Bob movie.
Bob's the reason why we're watching this. He was at the premiere of it.
Now, it came out like 4 years ago or 5 years ago.
No, it came out recently. They filmed it 4 or 5 years ago, 3 years ago.
Oh, they said it's listed on IMDb as a 2013 release.
It didn't come out.
No, yeah, it just came out like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it just came
out. So, I'll be honest, to me, this film is completely fascinating because it was all shot in 2012 when I opened my store on College Street in Little Italy. And everything on the street is shot around where my store was. Like the bar was just around the corner and a block away. And then you can see these Toronto, like I thought it was hilarious to see the south entrance to the Metro Toronto Convention Center was the Air Canada Airport Lounge.
Oh, is that what I would have got picked up on that part.
All the scenes, that's basically what, probably because I've spent too much time there, but the entire, like all the scenes with them coming down the escalators, them going to security, all that stuff. I knew exactly every spot in the convention center where they filmed those scenes. And they put up the fake stuff. So I thought it was a very, like it was hilarious to see all these spots I'm very familiar with being used.
Maybe that's why you like this film so much, Kevin. You had a familiarity with it. And it wasn't the
well, yes,
you were just
it
happy
also,
to look at it.
There's a, I have a very romanticized opinion of that time because I opened my store in 2012. Deborah was alive. We recorded a lot of episodes of the show down there. We did a lot. Like a lot of my life centered around that part of town during the time that that film was made.
You are correct. So maybe that's what it is. I just think the script was just kind of dull. And Jane Seymour is pretty much has nothing to do with this film.
No, she's just there to be the. She's like the Hell's Kitchen type of chef that she works for. But she treats everybody like crap. But she seems to like Emma Watson and another guy.
Yes.
And she's giving them the opportunity to put a menu together. If she comes over, she's invited to the wedding of the grandparents later.
Which doesn't make really much sense why she got invited to the grandparents' wedding.
Well, she's the friend, she's the boss of the daughter of the or the granddaughter.
But yeah,
and if you know Italian
a...
families, they invite everybody.
That's true.
To weddings. So there would have been like 5,000 people at that wedding.
That's true.
Everybody they knew that was would have been there.
Okay.
Have you guys been calling her Emma Watson this whole time? Because that's Emma Roberts.
Emma Roberts, sorry, not Emma okay. Watson. Emma Watson is the Harry Potter girl. Emma Roberts, okay.
And I think she's a better actress too, Emma Watson. But I want.
Yeah, to, no, and she's pretty in this movie. Like I used to think of her just as this teenager in these films, but she's definitely grown up. I know.
You just like that one bra shot she has in the bedroom. That's what you liked.
Well, she takes her jeans off too.
Oh, sorry. I forgot.
Yeah. That. So, and she's naked in their bed one day, but not that you see anything.
Yeah. Well, then.
But anyway, but I thought they were cute. They had history together. They definitely got across the fact that these were the same people. They, you know, the child actors were the same characters. And they did a lot of the same things, and they had this shared history. You often, with these stupid meet-cute movies, there's no sense of history between the leads.
No, they definitely had a sense of history. I will give them that. I thought they did a good job on relaying that to people.
And I like the feud between the two fathers and the Alyssa Milano. We didn't even mention Miss Alyssa Milano is the mother of Emma Roberts.
She really doesn't do much.
No, she's just kind of there.
Yeah.
She's now... She's now famous for sitting in on all the Kavanaugh hearings.
It makes sense that this was released in, filmed in 2012, because it feels like the cast feels like it was, like, written in 2005, and then they just didn't bother recasting it when they filmed it.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, as I said, I liked it. I thought it was, in fact, this has now become a personal movie for me. So I will revisit this on occasion.
Oh, God.
Little trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
Oh,
as this is what that time, this is what the streets were like. And actually, they filmed a lot of Kick-Ass 2 on the same street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where the Kick-Ass character's father's house was on the street across the street from that bar.
Oh.
Yeah. So... A lot of shots taken there. Anyway, but is it a great movie? Probably not.
Okay,
it's if you like cute romantic comedies like Bob does, then you'll probably like it.
Or if you're Bob, you like it.
I'm sure Bob enjoyed it.
Bob loved it, I'm sure, but he couldn't join us. Too bad for him.
Right. It's no Mamma Mia, but it's, you know.
I guess we got two more new releases, and then we go to. Well, we guess we don't even really have a vault. We can just do them all as this. So,
well, we have a vault.
Who's going to open the vault this time, though?
I will.
Okay.
Let's talk about the After Party on Netflix, Dan.
Oh no.
I guess I should have pulled it up, which I didn't, but I will. After Party. Where is the intern with all my stuff?
I apologize. I didn't see it.
Only person you recognize is Shelley Hennig.
Oh, here we go. Harrison Holzer, Kyle, Jordan Rock. I don't recognize anybody.
Is his name only Kyle?
That's what it says, Kyle. Kyle's name is Kyle. Okay, Dan. Who picked the After Party, by the way? Dan did?
No, it's Kevin.
Kevin picked the After Party and didn't watch it. Okay.
Don't punish me for this one.
The After Party, it's interesting. I mean, it's based on a guy that is trying to get in the rap industry, and his best friend is trying to help him. And they spend the whole night trying to get the record producer to listen to him.
Yeah.
And they get invited to an after party in the end.
Yeah.
And that's when hijinks occur.
And he's trying to have sex with the sister who's played by Shelley Hennig.
Yes, he's trying to get in the sister's pants all night.
Who's probably the best part about the movie for me, even though she shows up and then she's like, I'm just going to leave now. And then comes back.
Well, what did you think of this? Oh, yeah, Unfriended. I know her from Unfriended. And Ouija. Yeah, yes, you do. I have seen her.
As you're saying, you've seen him from Unfriended. You're glitching really bad right now. Is someone else on this call? That's creepy.
No. Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. It's so funny.
Oh, come on. I thought that was a good one. Okay, I didn't like this at all.
Really?
It's supposed to be a comedy, right?
Yes.
The only thing I found kind of funny was when he was rapping and saying, I saw the Passion of the Christ and I didn't even cry. Okay, maybe that one time. But, like, that was in the trailer anyway. I don't know. I just didn't really get much enjoyment from this one at all. I just thought it was kind of like the sitter, how they just go through hijinks, then they go to an after party.
I think this had real potential.
I thought it was just bland.
I like how he got busted when he puked all over the place after smoking the weed.
Or the seizure boy?
Seizure, and then they called him seizure boy. I thought that joke was working for me. I mean, I don't think there's any laughed out funny moments, except when he starts cutting up his buddy at the party. When he gets pissed off at his friend for screwing things up and he just cuts him off.
Okay, yeah, that was, like, the raps were pretty, like, creatively written. I'll give it that, but, like, everything else framing it, I didn't really like. Because it's just, like, basically, like, okay, so he's a SoundCloud rapper trying to make it. And I thought, like, his buddy had more interest in making him a rapper than he did. And he was like, okay, I'm just going to join the Marines because I'm a meme now.
Yeah, that was kind of weird that Benjamin Bratt plays his dad and just has nothing to do.
That was Benjamin Bratt?
Was it? No, Benjamin Bratt. It's whatever. It's
I couldn't recognize. I don't remember who he was, but the other guy was David Wallace on The Office.
But what the thing is, this movie is it had potential. I actually see an actual script here that could have worked. I think they need to bring somebody in, have a little bit more punchy dialogue. I thought the friend worked very well as his character. I don't think he ever came out of character.
I didn't like the friend at all, but I think that's because I hate the movie Sex Tape, and he's the little fat kid that blackmails Jason Segel.
Really?
And see, like, for some reason, I had a distaste for him from the first scene, and I looked up what he's been in, and that was because of it, I think, subconsciously.
I don't know. I think Kevin might even like this. This is the kind of movie Kevin would pick and like. It's simple. Yeah. It's nothing going to really interrupt you. You could watch it. You could do your laundry doing it. You could play cards. It would just be on.
I don't know why I didn't like it at all, but I don't know. Something about it just didn't click for me.
I mean, I was kind of getting a little annoyed by the end. I mean, it's only an hour and a half. I'm like, guys, let's punch this up a bit. Let's move.
Yeah, and like the music styles, like, I thought the music was okay, but, like, the one scene when, like, Blasia, the stripper, is dancing, and then it just goes to Betty Davis's eyes when he's, like, looking at her and just, like, throw dollar bills. Like, everything about this I didn't like. I don't know why.
I think it was close, but not close enough, if that makes sense. Like, I think there was an effort put in here.
I don't know. The raps, yeah, I'll give creative, but
I think if you were in a video store, you could pick it up.
Yeah, maybe.
And I think if you were 13 or 11 or 12, maybe that preteen audience, it might work.
Yeah, this is the movie I probably like when I was 12.
Yeah, like, it's not going to do anything for anybody, but you're 12, you're like, hey, this is kind of cool, you know, because this is when the people have ambition. I agree with you, it falls short of any mark you're trying to have it hit.
Yeah.
I just really think it should have been punched up the comedy more. I have to go through that again. I didn't hate it. I just didn't think it was good.
Because there wasn't not much funny going on here, supposed to be. Like, even by Netflix film standards, I don't think anyone has seen this. That's like 2,000 votes on IMDb.
Oh, wow. Because, I mean, I think they try. I mean, they introduced that car scene they tried with. What do they call him? Seizure Boy they tried with. Like, they kept trying things, but it all failed.
I thought, what's the friend's name anyway? Jeff. My name is Jeff. I felt like he got the Ferris Bueller, like, camera from Ferris Bueller. Arc that is like, oh, I'm gonna take my dad's Rolls Royce out on the town, go to the after party. I can't. He loves this car more than me, and then he has kind of stands up to him at the end there. Just kind of like, okay, it's just better movies at this point.
I think it kind of shows you that though, his dad treats him like crap.
Yeah, and then the dad comes on his side at the end there too.
Yeah,
like I thought they, you know, I'll give you that they tried, but like everything just fell short of a mark for me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm moving. Next up, Predator.
Ooh.
Boyd Holbrook, Olivia Munn,
Jacob Tremblay,
Jake Busey,
Keegan-Michael Key,
Thomas Jane. Thomas Jane, and I think that's about it.
Yvonne Stravowski?
Yes, Yvonne Stravowski's in it. Yes, you're correct.
And then the guy from Moonlight, Trayvon Rhodes?
Yes. Maybe? Yes.
Okay. Oh, and Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us.
Correct. Okay. Dan.
Wasn't the guy from, what was that movie with, or that show with, where they hunted down Escobar? He was in it?
I know the movie you're thinking of. A show, a Netflix show.
Oh, Pablo? Or, yeah, I know what show you guys.
He was also in Logan. He was the villain in Logan.
Boyd Holbrook.
That's Boyd Holbrook.
That's Boyd Holbrook.
Yeah, that's the first one he said.
And Psylocke.
Yeah, Olivia Munn, we said that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you want to talk about a movie that I thought failed on every level? Predator.
Predator.
Kevin.
Yeah.
So you can't even understand what's going on. The movie starts off, it's like boom, 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 something happens. They run around, and a package shows up the front door, and Jacob Tremblay picks it up from his dad. He's got a bunch of Predator gear in it. And 30 seconds later, we're at this some secret base with a Predator on a table. Am I wrong here, Dan?
Like, I had, like, no, yeah, it just kind of starts weird. But I had, like, I didn't really have a lot of trouble following it, but it just wasn't cohesive.
Oh, you didn't have any problems following it. Where did they get that minivan, that camper? That just randomly showed up.
The RV?
The RV. Where did they get
like
that?
All of a sudden, they don't have one car, and then they have, like, three.
Yes.
Okay, that's fair.
And where did those weapons come from? Did the RV have them?
I mean the beginning. I could follow the beginning. And it's like just like, oh, wow, space battle, wormhole, let's go to Earth. And then I hate how the IMDb synopsis gets it wrong, though. It's like when the kid triggers the return of the Predators, yeah. He doesn't trigger the return of the Predators. That guy's already there. But when he's frickin' with the toy, the other one's find him because of the homing beacon.
Correct.
Super Predator. Yay.
Why is Jacob Tremblay in this film?
I don't know, because he could play a good kid with autism.
Do we need him?
No.
Is he needed at any time? I wanted somebody to bullet that kid 20 minutes into the film.
I think he had, like, one decent moment when Sterling K. Brown's like, then he says something, and he's like, oh, reverse psychology. How about you don't go fuck yourself? Okay.
So, Kevin... This movie has so many issues, I can't even explain it to you. I'm confused half the time of what is going on.
Well, all right, so I know I wanted to see it. But then everybody I knew saw it said, this is a piece of junk, stay away from it.
Didn't you like those Predator dogs?
They were the only, but they serve no purpose.
No, yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, so... This one follows you. Why?
Dun.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's so true.
It's literally they're running up, like that whole scene where on the prison bus.
What's going on?
The prison bus was terrible. Thomas Jane making bad jokes. K. Peele making bad. Peele? Okay. No, that's K.
Yeah.
Michael Keegan, K, was making it. It was terrible.
His Thomas Jane should have been the lead because... Boyd Holbrook is just really boring in this. I mean, his character sucks, but, I mean, like, Thomas Jane, like, his Tourette's got used as such a gimmick. Like, the character's Tourette's. But I did find that one line was funny when he was like, fuck me in the face with an aardvark.
Yes.
I laughed at that, but it's just, it's, like, yeah. Like, I didn't hate this as much as everyone else, but there's also nothing good you can really say about it.
It's forgettable. Literally, you walk into the theater and you forgot everything you saw.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to see. It makes no sense. I'm still confused. Is this supposed to be an 80s action movie?
Yeah, I don't know. Because like, it's an impressive cast, but there's not one interesting character.
I mean, I'd like to give Olivia Munn stuff, but I'm still trying to figure out. I thought she was a scientist, not a shooter.
I don't think they ever explained. She's like, I'm a scientist. I called NASA I wrote a letter to them and I was like, hey, like if you ever find anything spooky from outer space, call me, bud.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Why are you calling her?
Because the synopsis says she's like a science teacher or something. It's like, I don't get it. I thought the Predator breaking out of like the place was a good scene though. Like, I thought, like, the kills were decent, but, like, the writing was just bad. Like, the the third act, I was like, they kill him like a kind of a major character in a blink and you miss it moment. And it's like, why?
I'm just trying to figure out where, like, there was no story here that made sense. Like, I didn't understand any of it.
I guess it's just, okay, so can I spoil?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so this one traitor guy comes to Earth because he wants to give them, like, the MacGuffin of the movie that's like, hey, you can fight the Predators with this when they come and, because humans are going to go extinct, so you can fight the Predators when they come to take over Earth. And then Boyd Holbrook's like, because it's like just a super predator suit, right? Or yeah, something like that. And then Boyd Holbrook's like, hey, I hope they have that in a 42 long.
Yes, that was terrible.
And then Jacob Tremblay's working at this alien, like this government place because he has autism?
Yes.
I honestly thought that they were going to have a stupid Jurassic World type twist where they made him like, they made his mom fucking alien, and he's the son.
Well, they kept going on. Olivia Munn, I think, says twice in the movie, you know, autistic children are, you know, people are saying they're the new evolution. I'm like,
next time, the evolutionary change.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, so where are we going with this? They never went anywhere with that. They kept pushing it down my throat. I'm like, okay, I got it.
And especially, like, Jacob Tremblay's first scene when, like, they introduce him with the fire alarm going off, and the kids are like, hey, I'd like some Asperger's. That sounds good. And then he's just freaking out because of the sound. And it's like, okay, so this establishes that he's sensitive to sound. But what else the fuck does it do? And then he puts all the chess pieces back where they were exactly. So it shows he's smart. But I don't fucking know.
Okay, so it's not just...
All right, sorry.
So who directed this film?
Shane Black, which I do want to... I'm disappointed.
He's usually pretty good.
I was very disappointed in this film.
And he also was in the original Predator.
He was.
Yeah.
Which is a great film.
Yes, it's a classic.
And this is trash. Like, I couldn't even tell you when to watch this. Like, you could do your laundry during this film, and I don't think you'd miss anything. Could you come back and go, how did they get the RV? I don't know. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
It just shows up.
I thought the banter with the Looney Bin kind of worked at times, but a lot of it was just hit or miss.
I didn't like it at all.
Oh.
Again, I thought it was pointless. I'd rather know where they got the RV.
Yeah, that's going to haunt you forever.
It was driving me nuts. And I just, I want a basic film. Got some Predators. I got it. So we're only going to fight the Predators at night? Okay. I was just so bored.
But they have an 11-foot super Predator, and Sterling K. Brown says, fuck every line of dialogue.
Yeah, boring. Absolutely terrible. Speaking of movies that put me to sleep, Kevin, thanks for recommending Joe Dirt.
Open the vault.
Oh, hi, Bob.
Oh, look where he went. Wait,
close the vault. Close
Bob. Oh, my God. He's the crypt keeper now. Hello.
I lost 5 pounds.
Is he stuck in there?
Okay, Joe Dirt.
Joe Dirt. Wow, David Spade wrote it.
Did he actually?
He did. Brittany Daniel, Dennis Miller, Adam Beach, Christopher Walken, Jamie Priestley. Excuse me. Kid Rock. Fred Ward. And nobody else I know.
Joe Dirt, the original redneck fantasy. Yeah. What a classic.
Kevin.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I think it came up as we were discussing the one where he plays the father.
It did.
Oh, yeah. Father's Day. Or no. Yeah,
Father's Day. Something like that, yeah. Not Father's Day.
No, yeah. Father's Day.
Father's Day. Okay. I didn't laugh once.
Okay. No, it's not funny. It's not very good.
I remember, I haven't seen it for probably like 7 years, but I remember liking the Buffalo Bill part.
Oh, my God, that was terrible.
Was it?
He's in the pit pretending he's the chick from Silence of the Lambs. Oh,
yeah, that's all I remember. And then they get him out of the well. And then, yeah. That wasn't funny.
I not found one scene funny.
Okay.
Not one scene. I tried hard to like this film. Sat there going, nothing happens. They sit around, he talks. He talks that stupid voice, telling stories. And then I realized, no, he's not using a stupid voice. That's David Spade all the time. And he's wearing his mullet hair, and they make fun of it. And he's like, don't make fun of my hair. I have a hemi. I'm like, oh.
He has a what?
A hemi. And he's trying to go around trying to find his parents. And he keeps running into people that'll help him find his parents. So they know why they left him. That's it? Is there anything more to say, Kevin? Are you trying to kill me?
No, that's pretty much it. I remember Jamie Pressler being very attractive in this.
Yeah, she's smoking hot. But she can't act either.
No.
And I'm just sitting there going, is something funny going to happen? Nope. Let's go meet Christopher Walken. Hey, how are ya? You want to work for me? Okay, I'm David Spade. Then I left that guy because I'm Joe Dirt. And then I went to work at a carnival where I met somebody else. And that's where I got my big break to find my parents. I'm like, oh, my God, you guys are killing me here. Kevin.
Now I'm remembering someone like shooting Brittany Daniels' dog.
Yeah.
Or something. Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. I don't even think I liked this as a kid, actually.
I don't get any appeal to this film at all. Like, the whole film, and then he gets to the end. So we finally get to meet his parents. I'm like, oh, yay, maybe this will explain something. They didn't want Joe Dirt either. They left him there. I'm like, that sums up the whole movie to me. They didn't
Sometimes
want
Sometimes you get these movies as punishments.
The audience doesn't want Joe Dirt either.
No.
Like, and then they went and made a number two? Why?
Yeah, I didn't realize there was a second Joe Dirt 2.
Wasn't it straight to video?
It went straight to Netflix. Sure.
Straight to what?
Netflix.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, okay, there's a Joe Dirt 2. Kevin obviously wanted me to watch Joe Dirt 2, which he didn't, obviously, because he didn't watch it.
I said I wasn't aware it existed.
So I sat and watched Joe Dirt 2.
Awesome.
I didn't think there was a movie worse than Joe Dirt 1. Wait, I just watched Joe Dirt 2. You know what's great about Joe Dirt 2? It's the same movie.
Yay.
Oh, awesome.
So he goes back
into Joe Dirt 1, it's more the same.
He goes through an alternate reality. Because the angel sent him to figure out, because he made a choice, he goes back in time.
Oh, nice.
And he loses Brandy. And then he has to figure out how to get Brandy back, to get his life together. And it becomes Joe Dirt's It's a Wonderful Life.
A lot of sequels with the same formula and going back in time. Same movie, but back in time.
So Christopher Walken shows up. Adam Beach shows
Joe
up.
Dirt.
And again, it's less funny than the first one. And I find the first one even funny.
Hot Dirt Time Machine.
I think I lost IQ points watching this one.
You lost your what?
Well, he basically rips off Forrest Gump at the beginning. And he goes like, hi.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
He does do that. He does that line. And this woman goes to me, okay, I'm waiting for my bus. I'm willing to listen to your story. I'm like, didn't we do this in Joe Dirt 1 with Dennis Miller? Because I just watched it. Now I'm watching Joe Dirt 2. And then he starts telling stories about everybody. It was a 4-hour epic of the same thing I just watched.
It was probably only about an hour and a half.
They're both an hour and a half. And literally, Kevin, they have the same scene where he gets Brandy's balls dogs off the porch. But this time he doesn't do it. So he loses Brandy.
Oh, man. He didn't want to touch the dog's balls again?
Well, he was trying to help Brandy, but Brandy's boyfriend at the time.
No creepy dog balls. Okay.
Oh, my God, Kevin. Why?
Oh, my gosh. I looked up the trailer, and yeah, it looks exactly like Forrest Gump, like on the bench.
But that in the film is exactly the same film. just a few different scenarios without even trying this time. Now they don't even try to be funny. He just talks in that stupid David Spade voice for the whole film again.
It came out in 2015. I thought it got released like this year.
No.
Oh my God.
And then I'm sitting there going, Christopher Walken's there. I'm like, why are you in this film? You really need cash. And he goes, hey, you, weren't you the Swami in my last film? I'm like, oh no. Now you're making callbacks to the movie I just watched. So even you do know this is a big piece of crap. I gotta admit, I do not want a Joe Dirt 3. I don't want to see Joe Dirt ever again.
Oh, you know, just for you now, they're making it.
No, they're not. This could not have done well enough to make a 3.
So they'll probably listen to this podcast and then like we'll probably
they're gonna go
somewhere.
Oh, they mentioned Joe Dirt. Somebody likes it. Let's make a third one.
Okay. Like their producers just want one more person who liked it and they're like, wow,
all it takes is one liked it.
Daniel said he'd watch it.
No Joe Dirt 3. No more homework for me. So did anybody buy anything?
Solo.
It came out this week, didn't it? What are the extras like?
There's an interesting round. You know, on the Infinity War one, they had a round table with all the Marvel directors talking about the films. So for Solo, they do a round table as well, but this time it's the cast and Ron Howard. And they talk about their own experiences coming to Star Wars and when they told people they had been cast and... It was good. I enjoyed these little behind the scenes. And it tells stories about how they came on board and, you know, what they liked about their character and stuff like that. And I, you know, you get the sense that they had fun making this movie.
So nothing about the Lord Miller films ever touched on?
Very little. A lot of it was reshot. So there's a lot of extras, a lot of deleted scenes. That I think, in fact, the one thing I found interesting is usually with deleted scenes, you're like, yeah, okay, I can see why they cut that, whatever. I could see every one of the deleted scenes being put into that movie and making it an even better movie.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, they explain why Han goes from being, wanting to be a pilot in the Imperial Navy to then being an infantry guy on a planet.
That would have been nice.
So there's actually a sequence where he's put in a TIE fighter and given a mission. And then there's a court-martial sequence where he's brought in to explain why he did so poorly, and he insults everybody, and they basically say, infantry. He can go die.
But the last time they were, like, in a court like that, things didn't go well with Jar Jar. Or, like, in that Phantom Menace one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why that was deleted. I don't know.
No, it's actually quite revealing. It's actually, oh, okay. You can sort of see a little bit of what it would be like to be a person drafted to fight in the Imperial Navy who was a complete screw-up like Han Solo is. Like, he doesn't like flying with a Nava computer. He likes to fly the ship on his own, and so he tries to turn off. TIE fighter pilots don't fly on their own. They work with a Nava computer who tells them what to do. So they only do limited stuff like fire the guns and stuff. But Han is given a mission and he wants to actually fly the ship. And so he starts to turn off the Nava computer, but the ship doesn't work as well without it. So he ends up, you know, not crashing, but, you know, ends up kind of crash landing in the hangar bay.
That would have been interesting. I would have accepted
it. It is interesting. I recommend if you get a chance to watch some of them. There's a little bit more with Han and Chewie and stuff, so there's a longer fight scene between the two of them. And there's a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff, and I don't know if you ever read Star Wars comics, the Dark Horse Star Wars comics.
I haven't read them. Don't know.
So there's two characters called Tag and Bink, and they did a bunch of stories with them. And I don't know, you, if you know your Shakespeare, you know, there's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yes.
From Hamlet, who are just kind of like kept behind-the-scenes characters, and they actually made a movie.
I love that
Rosencrantz
movie.
And Guildenstern are dead.
Love
so
it.
Tag and Bink are these two guys that are in the background of all the Star Wars, famous Star Wars stories. And they were like Imperials, but they just kind of end up kind of bumbling their way through the various locales of the famous Star Wars movies. So here, they're the two guards that throw Han Solo into the Wookiee pit.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, so they're actually named in that, but they didn't actually get a chance to do anything with them in the final cut.
Anything else, anyone?
No.
I don't know if I, the last time if I mentioned I bought something called Active Measures.
No, you didn't mention it.
So that's another movie that maybe we could review down the line. It's about Putin and Russian collusion. And some of the implications of what happened in the election in 2016.
That's a documentary?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's written down.
So, yeah, it basically explores Vladimir Putin and his methods in working in places like Ukraine and some of the Baltic states that rebelled, and how he quashed their independent movements, and how he applied some of that those tactics to the election in 2016.
Okay.
Sure. Talks about Paul Manafort and stuff like that.
Are we done, guys? Finished? We're finished for the
night? I guess so. You guys do anything with TIFF?
I got some autographs.
I went to...
Saw the intern. Dan saw a few films.
Yeah, I went to see Hold the Dark, which just came out on Netflix on Friday.
Oh, is that the one with the guy from... the Tarzan guy, and he was on...
Alexander Skarsgård?
Yeah. He's, like, fighting wolves or something.
And this one? It's, like, a mystery kind of thing. And,
I'll watch it if you want to review it the next episode.
Yeah, if you guys want to.
All right.
Okay. I'll say my thoughts for then.
What else did you see, Dan?
Also saw The Front Runner about Gary Hart with Hugh Jackman.
I do want to see that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I also saw Teen Spirit with Elle Fanning. I don't think that one got picked up yet for a release date. But Front Runner comes out in November.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Venom.
I hear it looks great. I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I just saw a trailer for it on my TV, but it's new.
Uh-huh. Yeah, did you guys see the Captain Marvel trailer?
Nope.
I saw her punching an old lady. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Other than that, not really.
And if they make it?
We review it.
Good night, all.
Simon makes us review it.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, thank you for listening. Could you please give us an iTunes review? And also, if you'd like to donate, please do so at our homepage.